Revelation Radio. Explore the sound shaping subculture. Tune in to 101.9 CFRC Wednesdays from 11 to noon to uncover revelations mixed into music from across the alternative scene, underground, and across the globe.
No rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Revelation Radio, Wednesdays at 11.
Hi, I'm James Abrams.
And I'm John Abrams.
And we're the Abrams Brothers. And you're listening to CFRC 101.9.
Please support community radio.
We'll start with some general ways to turn ugly duckling emotions into swans. First.
Rock. Rock, rock, rock it.
Second.
Rock. Rock, rock, rock it.
Third. This is what one doctor suggests. Number 7. Now, look forward in a positive mode. Start by spending a few minutes
each Thursday at 10 p.m. listening to Bright Side of the Pooh. What's it about? A way of life.
Number 10. Give unto others. Reach out to those you can help or inspire. Now, it's time to flip this tape. On side two, you'll find a wonderful, calming relaxation exercise.
Well, hey there, everybody. It's time now for When We Wake. I'm your host, Andrew Shaver, and on today's episode of When We Wake, I'm chatting with St. John's, Newfoundland singer-songwriter Kelly McMichael. Kelly McMichael's 2021 debut was shortlisted for the Polaris Prize. Her 2024 follow-up after The Sting of It won Album of the Year at the 2025 Music NL Awards in Newfoundland and Labrador. Let's hear a song from it, then get into our chat. It's Kelly McMichael with Too Soon to Tell.
Wipe those hearts from your eyes because it's too soon to tell. Don't trust those belly butterflies you feel like you fell. But it's too soon to tell.
It smells like love, but it's
too soon to tell.
It smells like
on the basket, you're ahead of yourself. Your body wants something that you don't, so don't ask it. We're just attracted to smell. And it's too soon.
Such a difficult
Kelly, how's it going?
Great.
It's really great to meet you, first of all.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's worth noting that, yeah, that we'd never met. And here it is, finally.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a fan of yours for a while. And we'll talk about Long Way Around later.
Sure.
I was so thrilled by what you put down on that tune. So. You know, it's great. It's great just to be able to meet you like this.
Yeah.
And thanks for doing it.
You too. Thanks for having me
on. Right on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're in St. John's. I mean, I know you're in Newfoundland. Are you in St. John's, like, proper? You live in St. John's.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But that's, let's go back. That's not where you started. As best I can ascertain, that was in Ontario. And I moved east from Ontario, like so many people did. But after you did, you're from Peterborough. Is that right?
I am from Peterborough, Ontario. Yeah.
It's a cool town, right? Did you enjoy growing up in Peterborough?
I had a great experience because I was fortunate enough to go to, there was an arts program, like a right. public school arts program that was downtown Peterborough. And so I was exposed to a lot of, you know, arts culture, and we were encouraged to go to events. And of course, this was like, you know, a different time when there were more community art spaces. And I think even like, you know, campus radio was a bit more active. So I was, you know, I was really lucky to get to participate in that and get to know, other artists, like disciplinary people that are, I think like the concentration of people in my high school that like went on to have careers in the arts is really cool. And it's
that's cool.
Sometimes having a career in the arts feels like this, you know, really mysterious financial instability, like not non-tangible thing, but when you know more people that have done it or are doing it, it helps fuel your belief that you can do it.
Right,
is
right.
A huge part of the battle, I guess.
In high school, did you know that was what you wanted? Like that you wanted to make your career in the arts? You knew that?
Not necessarily. I was really musical, but I actually did, I didn't know how to do music in like a school setting. So I actually did, I pursued visual art. And my parents were not that musical. They liked music, but they didn't really know anything about it. But my mom was a painter and an art teacher. Mm. So anyway, so I went into visual art and did that in university as well. I went to the University of Guelph and, yeah. And then it was while I was doing that, that I realized that kind of like music was the thing that I couldn't stop thinking about and couldn't tear myself away from. But I just had never known how to put music into a school context.
You didn't know how to put music into a school context, which I guess presupposes that you knew there was going to be school after high school. There was more school.
I just mean like when choosing classes, like it was like, you know, your music courses are like concert band, like that wasn't the kind of music that I wanted to do. I wanted to write songs and sing and play like rock and pop music.
Right.
So there wasn't really a school program
I
for
see.
that
I see. I see.
that I knew about or that was available to me.
But you wanted to go to school and you wanted to, and so you were doing visual arts, fine arts at Guelph. You knew you wanted to go to university and study art?
I guess I was in that. I mean, I was pretty indecisive. I wanted to be a marine
Yeah.
biologist for a while.
Who didn't, Kelly? I did too. I took
Yeah.
one half credit of biology and I was like, I think I could. No, not at all. But I was like, that would be awesome. Just swimming with the dolphins, because that's all they do, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it became very apparent to me that I was more of an arts-brained person. So I guess, yeah, I was, lucky to be like encouraged to pursue post-secondary education, like almost more for the experience than exactly knowing what I wanted to do with it.
That's
So,
cool.
which is obviously
That's cool.
a privilege to be able to do that, but
Sounds like it doesn't surprise you where you've ended up. This makes sense to you.
it has been a very interesting path that does make sense in a way, but there have definitely been surprises. Yeah, Newfoundland and also being like a front person. Like I never thought I'd really be the front person. I was very, very shy when I was younger. And I always pictured myself being piano accompaniment backup vocalist, which I did do for I did a lot of that work. My first big gig was playing with Gentleman Reg in Toronto. And that was like, we did a ton of touring, and band was on Arts and Crafts, which was like a label that I was very into at the time. So that was really exciting, and my introduction to, like, I guess being, doing pro stuff, playing bigger festivals and going on the road and things like that. And then, yeah, I ended up playing with Sarah Harmer many years later, kind of through that, which was also very exciting, dream come true.
What was we'll take a pause there for a second. What made it a dream come true to play with Harm?
Well, I listened to her in high school, and I loved, that album You Were Here was amazing. And I, just remember going to see her and seeing her backup vocalist, keyboard player, and being like, oh,
That could be
I
me.
wish I could do that. So it's pretty wild
You manifested it.
that happened, yeah, like 15 years
No
later or
kidding.
something.
Like you saw with such clarity in that moment. How old were you? Were you in high school when that happened?
I have a I definitely went to see her in high school, and then yeah, I want to say I was, like 16 or 17 when I had that thought. Yeah.
So you were on tour with Gentleman Reg,
Yes.
with Sarah Harmer.
Yes. And
Okay.
then
So
years
how did the
later.
conversation go when you finally like, wait, if you're done with your keyboard player, I'm ready.
Yeah.
How'd you broach that subject?
Well, I just played and sang my little heart out on that
There
tour.
you go. You weren't playing to a room full of people. You were playing to one
Yeah.
person, hey? You were just playing to
I was
Harmer.
auditioning for her every night.
Totally.
Yeah.
It went well, apparently.
I guess so.
Yeah.
And then getting to Newfoundland is a whole different story. But yeah, I was playing in Toronto and playing in a whole bunch of different bands. I had my band Rouge, which kind of had like a cult following, but isn't really known much outside of Toronto. But
Not to be confused with Deer Rouge.
not to be confused with Deer Rouge, yes.
Sure.
Yeah, much more obscure and cooler.
Much cooler. Far more obscure,
Yeah.
unknown, and cooler.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And then, yeah.
I mean, Hidden Cameras, that's a big name you were playing with,
Yeah,
hey?
that was through
They're
a Reg connection too. Like we were
Yeah.
together and ended up getting sort of absorbed into that band.
To always on keys as the side player in these bands?
Mostly I did do when I played, I did some touring with the Burning Hell,
All right.
who do a lot of touring in Europe, and they invited me to open with my own project. So I just released my own album for the
So you just released Waves or a Rouge thing? This was Kelly McMichael.
Yeah.
Okay, so you just released
so
Waves
my,
in 2021.
Yeah, proper whatever solo Kelly McMichael project, Waves.
It's a little bit more than a whatever project shortlisted for the Polaris. I mean, come on. Yeah, whatever. There's Waves, I put out this album.
Well, just some of the names, projects, solo. I guess I'm whatevering the solo project.
Yeah, yeah, right.
They invited me. So they were, we sort of knew each other in Peterborough, and then also St. John's. They were in St. John's right before me. We have a lot of mutual friends, and I, oddly enough, in PEI, on PEI, I should say.
I always trip that up too, because, you know, I'm from a
Wave. Yeah. When Waves was dropped, I was hanging out with them. I was doing a play, doing music for a play, and it was very strange.
At the Confederation
Center?
Oh, neat.
Yeah. And then they asked me to go on tour with them in Europe and also play in there with the Burning Hell. And they were like, you can play bass, right? I was like, not really. And they're like, but you can play guitar, so you play bass.
I mean, is it an analog? Yeah, I guess in some ways, right? If you're a good enough guitar player, it's an analog.
It's,
you can just pick, you know, it's just four strings.
You know, it, you have some transferable things for sure, but it is different.
Right.
A different thing at the same time, but it was a good opportunity for me to, you know, learn some more bass.
Right,
came in handy, and now, you know, now I do more writing of bass parts for my own projects, and
I see
because of that.
Right.
So all the little things that lead to other things in our lives,
little puzzle pieces, like 3D puzzle pieces layering on top of each other, expanding out.
Tangents, you just know.
Well, let's have a listen to some music from my guest on today's episode of When We Wake, Kelly McMichael's 2024 After the Sting of It album is laden with Music NL awards. From it, this is Stepping Stone. More of our chat after this.
Better I should know. keeps on blowing. But if you don't stick to anyone before you know it, you will find you're a stepping stone too.
My guest on today's episode of When We Wake is St. John's, Newfoundland's Kelly McMichael. That was a track called Stepping Stone from her award-winning album, After the Sting of It. That took home Album of the Year at the 2025 Music NL Awards in Newfoundland and Labrador. Now, before the song, Kelly and I were chatting about the myriad twists and turns and tangents and, well, stepping stones that go into building a career. And for Kelly, that included a stint doing a piece of theater in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island. Was that play you were doing when you connected with the Burning Hell in this way, was that like a tangent in your life that led to a tour in Europe and learning how to play the
bass? Well, I guess that's true. Like, was it because I was hanging out with them there? Yeah. I mean, we were like already friends and stuff, but I wouldn't have been much time with them so fresh on their minds for hiring me. I was also like close with Jake Nicol, who was playing with me, heavily involved in my project, and had toured with the Burning Hell for years. So what
I see,
a bit of a natural connection. The play was kind of an unrelated gig. It was cool to try
unrelated and unremarkable by the sounds of it. Hey?
I mean, it was a very prominent Newfoundland theater group that. They've toured all over, actually. It's called Between Breaths, and it was cool for me to just try that out, doing music for a play.
Okay. And that was your first foray into the theater world, musically or otherwise?
No, I've been around some theater.
I've been around.
I like to dabble in the arts, really.
yeah, sure. So what's your theater? Because that's my world. That's where I came.
Okay.
I've done a lot. And I'm about to go to Montreal to do a show next week for 7 weeks.
Okay,
so,
cool.
Yeah, I'm still very much ensconced, less than I was before, but, you know, somewhat in the theater world. So I'm curious about what your experience in the theater world
is. I I thought I wanted to do musical theater when I was in high school.
Yeah. Okay. And then what happened?
And then I just didn't really
like it.
Relate to.
Yeah, I get it.
Like, there's certain taste things that happen.
Totally.
Just, I was like, I like the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I like weird, raw, arty, edgy. But it's a lot of that musical theater world is just so.
I mean, yeah.
There's like Rent has like, you know, some very important themes such as the epidemic and queer folks and stuff like that, but it's still, everything gets so sanitized. I don't know if you find that.
I want it to be dirtier. I want it to take chances. If that piece is taking chances and like, you know, it's taking a risk at something, then I'm more likely to be into it. Even if I don't like the style of, I don't know, if we're talking musicals, even if I don't like the style of music, if it's taking a risk doing something, I find that compelling.
Yeah.
That's what I wanna connect with on stage.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think just the musical part in particular was like very often pretty sanitized and sort of classical vocals. I also like, I have a lower register voice, alto.
You have a great voice. I love your voice. And yours is the kind of voice I want to hear in musical theater, but we don't do all too often that we don't hear your voice.
Hi.
Exactly.
Like vibrato thing. And it just wasn't the style.
Doesn't touch me. No.
I get you. Yeah. But I did do a little bit of music for theater through my aunt, who was a prominent theater person. She started Nightwood Theater Toronto.
Wow. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, Nightwood's been going for, they just had a big anniversary of some kind. Could it have been 40 years?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, she was.
It was going for a long time.
She was big in like sort of fringe theater stuff, directing, acting, and writing. Wow. In Toronto in, you know, the 70s and 80s. And then
what was her name?
Kim Renders.
Oh, you had an alter your synth project is Renders.
Yeah, so that's my mom's last name.
That's your okay. Mom's like Kim Renders. Gotcha.
And yeah, and so she did a lot of fringe, weird, bold, edgy stuff, and she ended up being a professor at Queen's after a long life of being a struggling artist.
When was she I went to Queen's and I studied drama. Yeah.
Oh.
In the mid 90s through 95 to 99. Was she did she come after?
It would have been it would have been after.
She came after. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then she got a very sudden cancer diagnosis and died.
Oh,
and it was
I'm sorry.
Intense thing. And I sort of carried some of like her spirit and just like, I think it's helped propel me into the making of my first album, because it was like I was sort of writing and deciding what songs I wanted to bring forward into my project right after she passed away. And it just was part of my mental kind of like my headspace that I was in going into that, was like wanting to carry her like fearless kind of bold spirit. And she was an intense fierce woman. And I just always kind of think that a part of that was a through line for, I think it helped push me forward. I did end up just using my name as it is, Kelly McMichael, but it was Renders for a while there.
Why was it time for you at that point? Because you had already been working on these songs that became Waves before your aunt passed. So what was take me back to the time of the decision to say, you know, I think it's time for me to write songs as Kelly McMichael.
It was just like a more thoroughly thought out. It was the first time I made a full album. So Renders and Rouge were both projects that I didn't do very much recording. I mean, Rouge toured and played a lot of shows, but we released two songs. We never never got to the point of like figuring out how we wanted to record. I think we just were like really picky with who we wanted to work with, and also just young and didn't know what the hell we were doing, but like had a really high bar set.
Right.
People had offered and it just wasn't the right fit. And now I'm like, we actually really knew what we wanted and just needed to produce it ourselves instead of having other people produce. And now I'm very much like, my own records are very much produced by myself. Now Jake is a great co-producer, and his own style that he brings with what he's able to do with his unique approach to the gear that he has, and like his like custom things. Like I call him an inventor, sort of, because he's like inventing ways of doing things. And it's like, you know, I know what I want, but I can describe it in like a really really colorful kind of like metaphorical way, and he knows how to like make it happen with the gear. So
he knows how to render it.
Yeah. So he definitely, you know, gets co-production props for that. But I do realize, looking back on Rouge, like never recording, it's like, well, we actually do, like, it's like I had a strong production producer in me, but I just didn't know what it was or how to apply it. And which, you know, sometimes it's like you have that, you set too high of a bar to get something done. Like,
totally.
You just need to make crappy stuff in the beginning just to get to the next level.
Well, here's some early stuff from Kelly McMichael when she released as Renders. It's She's Badass.
There's a girl, I saw her on the bus. She was looking way too fierce for us. She had a camera, not a digital one. She had a leather jacket and her hair was so fun. It was out wild in your face like you couldn't forget her. I wish I met her. Hey girl, how'd you get to be so cool? I can tell you're badass, stacked with real class. Hey girl, how'd you get to be so fierce? I wish that we could have some beers and you could teach me.
That's my guest on today's episode of When We Wake, St. John's, Newfoundland's Kelly McMichael, all the way back from 2017 when she was releasing as Renders. That's She's Badass. Now, as we pick up our chat again, I ask Kelly whether the political fire that she's been feeling about the world these days is finding its way into her songwriting on the new album.
Yeah, I have had some of that going on in some of the writing, the songs that I've started working on. And I was talking to, it's difficult to write a political song. Sometimes you want it to be really accessible for people to understand the messaging, but then the overdoing, oversimplifying the lyrics can have sort of like a cheesy, it just doesn't quite, I don't know. It's too literal.
That's right.
It doesn't have that magic to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm also like more of a, I would say I'm a little more like melodically driven and like instrumental driven artist than like lyrics. I mean, I try really hard for my lyrics, but I wouldn't say I'm, you know, I'm not like a Bob Dylan, absolutely lyrics first kind of folk singer type. So yeah, I'm trying to find that space of where the political influence lies. Music is still really exciting.
Is that a comfortable sort of conflict and that you're feeling there?
It's actually, it's had me tripped up a little bit. So I do feel like I'm trying to push through, finding what my voice is on this next thing.
Did you feel like on Waves and on after the sting of it that you knew what your voice was as you were writing the songs? Like you knew what your voice was for that album, and did it change between Waves and after the sting of it, and now it's changing again because of the world, you know?
Yeah, good question. I think Waves was because it was my first album, my first chance to do a full album. I had a lot of songs that had been lying around, and I had tried them live. I'd played them as part of like renders in more electronic form, or I played them with certain songs with my rock band that I had on the go, and you know, some had lived in both versions of the band, and some were just from one project. So, and I sort of, anyway, I had a lot to choose from.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sort of always in between the sort of more rock attitude kind of vibe, and then the synthy electronic stuff.
It's such an interesting blend to have on the same album.
Yeah. Well, it's hard. It's there's a lot of meandering and sometimes unsure how to put them together. Yeah, there's sort of the like Americana influence at times. I guess that's like a roots kind of thing. And then I have my sort of like dark girl piano. Like Fiona Apple was sort of my first big artist that I was really, really into.
At what age? When was Fiona Apple someone for you? I mean, Harmer was someone at 16. Was Fiona before that?
Yeah, was like when I was 13, and she's been like a through line, all the way through. She's been such a great artist that's innovative and unique and continually putting out great stuff. So she's remained relevant for me for sure.
That's cool.
But yeah, so I really enjoy variety, and sometimes knowing, having a bit more of a focus of what I want the album to sound like is a bit tough for me. Waves ended up being a bit more rock leaning. I did have some more electronic stuff that ended up being cut from that album. And then after the sting of it, I think it had a lot of like solo, like kooky solo piano time, because it was in the pandemic and I was fortunate enough to have a piano to work on.
And these were all original, like new songs that you wrote for after the sting of it, whereas Waves was a collection of songs that had existed over the time, as you were talking about, over years.
Yeah,
after the sting of it, all new songs.
Yes. Right. Yeah, I did take one song, the Spell song, which is like a very short, weird, witchy electronic layers. That was actually the end of a song that I recorded for Waves, but it was just
interesting.
It just didn't fit in. It was too electronic-y. I was like, I just love this ending so much. And then I sort of had a witchy vibe going for after the sting of it. So I was like, let's put this in here. So that was one from a previous record, but everything else was mostly written within 2 or 3 years, maybe. I remember I was writing like at the time in Charlottetown and PEI when Waves was coming out. I was like writing. I remember writing Bomb actually in the hotel that I was in.
Like bread in the stomach of a duck, expanding, I would if I could give it up. She says no need to hold on to the anger, but the insides are rotten and it's hotter and hotter, and I'm so bothered. I'm so bothered. I'm a bomb.
My guest on today's episode of When We Wake is Kelly McMichael. That was a big hit of hers called Bomb. Now back to our chat. Bomb had a pretty nice life, didn't it?
Yeah, that's cool. That's the first time I've had some decent radio play.
Yeah.
And I discovered that satellite pays well.
Sure does. It's the best in the game. That's for sure.
So that was pretty wild. Yeah, I never knew about that. So many things I didn't know about the business side of doing music because I was just a hired gun. And
right
now it's like, well, I guess I should write some more songs like Bomb because I actually pay some bills. Like paying bills with like just like passive income is wild.
What does that mean? Well, let me ask you this. What does it mean to you, Kelly McMichael, to write more songs like Bomb? How would you go about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes I don't mind like a project, like a writing project that's like do this or like write for this purpose. I like imagining like a world that you're writing for. I don't, any kind of direction is helpful and is fun, but at the same time, I also like to throw everything out the window and just be like as wild as possible and not have any limitations at the same time. So yeah, that's why I'm kind of stuck in this moment of like I'm feeling really worked up about political what's going on in the world, but I also it's jamming up my creative flow if I think too hard too literally about that. And I also am concerned about paying the bills. I think it would be smart to do what has worked in the past.
What do you think worked about Bomb? I guess that's what I'm wondering.
I don't know. It's funny. You don't always know what's going to work.
So that's what makes me wonder. It when you say, I know it's flippant, but I like this as like a thought experiment. I guess I should write more songs like Bomb. What is it about Bomb? How does one go about repeating that? Like, do you remember writing Bomb and recording Bomb and giving Bomb shape? And did it feel like this could be a big thing. This could be the Bomb. Or did it just feel like another song? And then it did become a quite a big success. And now obviously it'd be great to replicate that, but how do we go, you know, what aspect of it, what's your entrance to trying to replicate that if you were going to?
Yeah, I think I do have kind of like characters that I write from.
Okay, cool.
Which
cool.
is partially the like Renders versus Kelly McMichael. Like Renders was a bit more of a electronic synth pop character, and Bomb was more of the like riot girl 90s girls with attitude character. I think I can have like different characters that I imagine. It's like, it's funny, like what do you actually picture when you become these characters? It's certainly fun to take on those roles and sort of like let that take the wheel instead of, it's like you can kind of turn your brain off and just go when you become.
That's very cool. Yeah.
Character.
So you've got a drawer full of characters that you take out and put on and sort of see the world through when you're writing songs.
Yeah. I wonder if it's also because I was like a backup singer. And like I've been very into doing vocal impressions of not only like singers but like talking voices, always into voices.
Cool.
And animals. I was actually known as a great animal impersonator.
What are you talking about? Where were you known?
As a kid.
We're amazing.
Like my friends and my family were like, Kelly can do a perfect impression of all of our cats.
Wow. Can you still do that?
Yes. Good cat impressionist or impersonator. But
I'm not going to ask you to do it. So you're going to just have to do it if you want to do it. I'm not going to.
I will tell you that I do a little meow at the start of You Got It Wrong, which is the first track on after the sting of it. It's an impression of my cat, Jones.
There it is.
There you go.
We got it. We sure did. Now let's get it for real. There it was. This is Kelly McMichael with You Got It Wrong. On today's episode of When We Wake is Kelly McMichael. That's the song that kicks off her 2024 release after the sting of it. It's called You Got It Wrong. And now as we pick up our chat again, Kelly tells me about finding her own voice as a songwriter.
I think it actually blocked me for a while with my own writing because I was too imitational.
Right.
And like, I just wanted to sound like the people I was listening to, and then I didn't know what my own voice was for a long time. But but then after like doing it a lot, I kind of just realized it was like, it was fun to explore the different voices. And then I did find my own writing perspective. And maybe that's some of my aunt's motivation or whatever came into into play to sort of tie it all together.
Do you remember, is there a song that when you think about this, when you explain finding your own voice like that, is there a song that comes to mind as the one where you're like, yeah, I kind of locked into something new there?
I definitely found some weird corners on after the sting of it. I do feel like sometimes songs and voices just like come out of me without, I'm not thinking about it, and I don't really know what it is. Like there's a song on Waves called She Makes Men, which is was an older song that I've had for a long time, and it just kind of like came out of me, and it didn't take much thought. It just seemed like it was already I don't know.
And when that happens, do you accept it and you're like, well, that's what it is? Or do you go, I need to work on that more because that was too easy?
It is a weird feeling where you're like, is this right? And then you get different opinions from different people. And sometimes you'll have like one of my songs that was popular from Waves is called Montreal. Yeah,
beautiful song.
And it's like sometimes you show it to the wrong person first and they're like, man, that one's not really doing it. And so that was actually on the back burner for a
long time. Who was that person?
One of my good friends who now I know to not
send early material to or put any credence in. Right.
And then it was actually Amelia Curran approached me to, she was interested in producing my first record in Waves, and so she ended up not being able to do it, but we met and she went over my demos and she gave me some great feedback going into recording, and she loved Montreal, and she was like, this is a single.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, okay.
And that reframed it for you. That was all. It just took Amelia to be like, no, I like this. This is the one. You're like, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Great. I mean, that line, what's the lyric? I come when you call? Is that what it is? I come when you call, Montreal?
Yeah,
me too, because I lived in Montreal for better part of 15, 20 years.
Something. Oh, yeah.
And I had a relationship explode. I was with a Quebecois woman. The one that got away, it's not her. It's Montreal. I feel like Montreal got away. And,
interesting.
And so when I heard your song, I come in that lyric, I come when you call. I was just like, yep, I do.
Spoke to me. Well, interesting, because I had to make a choice. I also had it was a relationship that brought me to Newfoundland.
Right.
To St. John's. And that also exploded. But I was too integrated and too in love with St. John's. And I was in the middle of recording Waves when that happened. And then that was right before the pandemic. I was like, I'm single. I got this great new album. Like, yeah.
You're like, does anybody care? Is anybody out there?
And then it was like, oh, wait, we're going into a pandemic.
Totally. Totally. Sick joke.
But yeah, I chose to stay, and I didn't. People are always asking me what brought me to Newfoundland. And I was like, well, it was originally a relationship, but a lot of reasons. Now, I think it's more important, like,
why you're there still. Yeah.
Year, I guess.
But, exactly. I get that.
But yeah, talking about like trajectories and the way things could have gone, life is a wild ride.
Well, look, one more thing I'd like to talk to you about. Mm. The roads have brought us to it quite nicely here.
Yeah.
You sang on the new Clever Hopes, Long Way Around. And boy, oh boy, you knock it out of the park. I was so thrilled, and I continue to be so thrilled by what you brought to this song. And so you brought something to the song that surprised me. And so I'm just wondering how you got into the song.
Yeah, it was a song that was easy to, like, I really enjoy singing backup vocals and like layering things up. And I wanted to give you guys I was like, the more you have, you can cut it back to whatever you need, but it's fun for me to just layer things up. And it felt easy. Like I didn't have, it came easily to me. Like, it wasn't like I was really stuck on looking for ideas. So I kind of just went with what was flowing out. And I'm glad it went over well.
I love that you sent us your vocal warm-up. As I guess you were listening to the song, you did some sort of I can't remember exactly the trills that you were doing, but you were like, I don't know, maybe this is worth something.
Right.
And it's in the song. Like Danny's like, yeah, that's awesome. And so we've put it, you know, at the end of the song. I love that you had the inspiration to be able to know to send that.
Yeah, I mean, if it was like really rough, I wouldn't have sent it. But it's also one of those things where, yeah, you do it and then you end up hearing it a few more times. You're like, oh, I'll delete that. But then you just hear it a few more times as you record, and you're like, it's starting to feel like maybe it could actually belong in there.
Yeah, it sure did. Sure did. Well, anyways, Kelly, you've got a plumber in your house. You've got things to do. It's such a pleasure to get to know you like this today. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Yeah, thanks. You too.
Well, I hope you'll permit me this indulgence. This is the new Clever Hopes featuring my guest today, Kelly McMichael. She does such a great job. It's called Long Way Round. Thanks for listening to When We Wake.
Can you tell me what you want? Can you tell me what you need? When the blue beads have all gone and the no-ways lose their leaves, a sinking sunlight on the glass, the narrows widen in the bay and sky, the fog's rolling out at last. So long, farewell, I'll catch you in the by and by. I might surprise you like autumn in St. John's. Inside out and back to front. I might surprise you like autumn in St. John's. I'm willing and I'm down. And I'm looking your way now. And I know every time I blink, you turn around.
In the bed, hushed and hopeful in your room. I can't hear what's in your head, but I can tell that it's out of tune.